Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Facebook Live.
We are live on Facebook and live to the world on this podcast by the medium of sound. So thank you very much for listening.
Video.
And video as well.
Yes.
Which you can find on our Facebook page. You can comment there and post your questions and thoughts and we can react to it during the podcast. Same goes Twitter at Rugby Podcast. And yeah, thank you very much for listening. Had a nice weekend, gents. Wearing more Lions stash today, I see, Phil.
Double Lions stash today. I've got my Lions polo.
Ooh,
underneath.
Mate,
a collar pop.
Nice.
Yeah,
naturally. Good week. I've just watched a lot of rugby, to be honest. It's been pretty quiet. I've also booked a holiday to South Africa in March, April time.
Have you actually booked it?
I was with JB before, paid for the flights.
A little bit peculiar that a grown man would choose to go on his honeymoon to South Africa, same time that his mate is in South Africa, in the same city for the Jags game.
I might have arranged a little bit of crossover with mine and JB's itinerary, so we're both in Durban.
Oh,
for the
I'm so jealous.
For the Sharks versus the Jags.
Oh, man.
Happy marriage.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Right, well, maybe that will come up in conversation. There's so much to talk about. We have got, was it a major correction for Leicester Tigers? The other Avicii Premiership Pro 12, a discussion of the first weekend of the new tackle laws that have come in from World Rugby, some just genuinely brilliant rugby, a few more transfer rumours, a couple of games in fact, and Richard Cockerell to Toulon. That and more, and as I say, if you want to contribute, Facebook and at Rugby Podcast, tweet and comment right now, if not do so after the pod, if you're listening to this after the pod, and we can keep the conversation going through the week. But let's get hands in and pod on three. 1, 2, 3.
Pod.
This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're just three mates that love the game and jabber on about it every week, and thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate it. Thank you as well for your reviews. Thanking you in advance for just taking a moment out of your time, going to iTunes, leaving a 5-star review like Stu Pack has done, who says, "Hear me now, believe me later. This is the best rugby pod out there, a hobby league standard from two straight talking egg chasers and one Sail Sharks, and Sail Sharks' number one fan."
Who, Phil?
So thank you very much for leaving your 5-star reviews. Really appreciate it. Right. Where should we start? I think we should start with clearly what we have to agree is the biggest game of the weekend.
Oh, I couldn't. A huge game, loads of points.
Yeah.
Leinster Zebre.
Yeah.
I mean, why else would you go and rest all of your players if it wasn't for...
All of your players against one of your local...
rivals. This is such a big game. It's bigger than playing Munster. When they are top and you are second... And it's over Christmas, and it's a home derby. That's how big this game was. And
so Leinster rested all their players for that insignificant game against Munster, table-topping rivals. They rested all their players, but played them all against Zebre. So this is clearly the biggest game of the weekend.
And they were right to do so. I think the points back this up. There were, I think, over 70 points.
Yeah.
So
there were over 70 points, 70 of which were scored by Leinster.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well,
and they couldn't have managed that without all of those frontline players.
Quite incredible scenes. But, the good news is we don't have to talk about the Pro 12 again this podcast.
I think Ulster Scarlets, unfortunately for Phil,
Ulster Scarlets. We should really kick off with the first game of the weekend, which was Bath versus Newcastle.
Well, there was a couple of absolutely cracking games this weekend. In fact, there's loads of brilliant rugby to talk about. And this was a highlight as a game of rugby, as an 80 minutes.
Yeah, brilliant and very good performance by Newcastle right from the off. Their first half, and particularly Joel Hodgson, who controlled the game massively. Some of his kicking out of hand The big difference between his kicking, particularly in the first half, and George Ford's kicking, and Anthony Watson did a bit of kicking, was his ability to find grass. And Ford and Watson continually found Newcastle's back three, and he just kept finding grass and kept Bath pinned back in their own 22.
I tell you what else he does incredibly well is he sells that little dummy. And he's all, I mean, what is he? Maybe 9.5 stone? And he continually breaks tackles.
Yeah, he was man of the match, deservedly so.
I do like his story, and I think Newcastle have done this a couple of times now, which is they let the player go. The player isn't quite as good as they thought that he might be. Kieran Brooks being one, Mickey Young's been another,
yep.
Joel Hodgson being the latest. They've done it with Rory Clegg, although it turns out he actually wasn't that good. And they come back and they do well. Joel Hodgson is just the latest, and I love seeing him do well because obviously it didn't go quite his way down in Northampton.
Northampton, yeah.
So, yeah, incredibly impressive. But I think the best thing about it was, again, this is starting to become a little bit of a pattern at the moment. Teams going down, but not being out of reach. So I think Newcastle were 2 scores away. And as soon as they got that other score with about 10 minutes to go, it was on.
So when you say 2 scores away, Bath scored 3 times at the start of the first half to turn it completely around from Newcastle dominance. Sorry, 3 times at the start of the second half. And then Newcastle fought their way back into it.
George Ford's kicking played an important role when you look back in retrospect. Although there's one thing I want to bring up in relation to that is some, and I'm not going to paint everyone with the same brush, but some Newcastle Falcon fans not respecting the kicker.
Right,
didn't like that.
Can we get off Mount Pius about respecting kickers? It's not important.
All right, okay, so it's not respecting kickers then. What I would say is it's respecting the game's traditions.
No, not
because actually, I would say that it's silent, complete silence, having been at Leicester Tigers.
No.
Having been at Leicester Tigers, let me tell you, complete silence is more intimidating.
It's weird.
Than noise.
Yes, yes. Okay.
But respect the traditions of the game.
No, because we're starting to get somewhere here. The tradition of the game depends on where this game has been played. If you want to build your tradition that everyone gets a little drum and beats it as the kicker runs up, that will be your business. If your tradition as a club is to stay silent, stay silent. But I actually kind of like the individual characters.
Well, I will judge you depending on which tradition your club chooses.
I particularly don't...
No, because no one said that, did they? In a timely reference, the South Africa World Cup when South Africa went, the Yanni De Beer drop goal one. Not Yanni De Beer drop goal, the one where they won it. They made a film about it.
Against New Zealand.
They made a noise, right, to suck the ball through the posts. Do you remember that?
No. So
all the crowd go to suck the ball through.
But only the people directly behind the goal, presumably.
Well, I mean, that would make sense, but I think they all got carried away. So
they're sucking from all directions.
Yeah. So the net effect was actually neutral. But the point is, that was a little tradition. It wasn't silent from the kicker. It doesn't matter.
Another sound element, I'll just quick... Oh, no, sorry, you sound like you were going to carry on that one first.
I was just going to say, I particularly don't like the Argentinian tradition of shining a laser pen in the kicker's eyes.
Well, we mustn't judge.
Well, another thing at Kingston Park is the PA and match announcer, the PA system and the match announcer, unbelievably loud. And was everyone at Kingston Park parked illegally? Because there was just never-ending car announcements. I don't know. I wouldn't have left to go and move my car anyway with the game as tense as it was.
Unless I was George Ford.
I do wonder if that might have been David Flatman's car because he is sponsored by Range Rover.
John Welsh, chip kick. What a hero. What a hero.
The line break was incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
From a tight head prop to
take contact or just keep the ball in hand, just do something.
He should have grubbed it.
No, you've got 19 stone running full pelt at a 14 stone fullback.
Don't mean to kick them.
Keep running. Just keep going. Yeah. Worst that's going to happen, you're going to make an extra 10 yards after contact.
He should have gone for the grubber or completed his chip kick.
The other Falcons player that deserves a mention on the basis of Friday night's performance, you mentioned Joel Hodgson.
Oh, there was a few.
Nicky Gonover was just
Wilson.
Awesome. He
is so calm, isn't he? He has so much time.
Yeah.
How did he score this time? He picked the ball up from the back of the ruck and casually strolled over the line.
Yeah.
Well, no, it was a Waldock pass, wasn't it? Waldock break.
Was that last week that he picked up the ball and strolled over the line?
Yeah. And but it was the step and the finish. Just it's just so nonchalant to step whoever the last defender was and just casually dot the ball down.
Well, I mean, you could argue without Gonova and without Rocco, there probably wouldn't have been much of a game going on.
No,
those two contributed pretty much everything.
My God, they miss Foto Ali so much. There was a big drop in class to Alisson.
Yeah,
who didn't have a great game. The one thing I love, it was very much like the Newcastle versus Bath was just, I think, highlighted just purely by the front rows. On the Newcastle side, you had no neck, no hairstyle, no nonsense. And Bath, you had a top knot. The extravagant swagger in Bath side come to town, and Newcastle just the hard work.
I've got to say,
Scott Lawson actually was very impressed. Some of the hits he put in were tremendous.
But, one of the things I noticed about the Bath squad before they went out, when the team was announced on Friday, is they've still got quality throughout the squad. It's not a bad team. But you know when you start just chipping away at certain positions, so you got Alisson in instead of Khan, you had Ellis going to the back row again, you had Tom Dunn playing. Now, Tom Dunn's a very good young player, but he's not a seasoned international.
He's not a seasoned international. Tom Dunn did actually stand out for me in the game for his work rate.
Oh, he's very, very good.
Well, do you know how many tackles he made?
Don't know, I'm gone.
He made 9 more than any other man on the pitch. He made 25 tackles.
Wow.
Which is...
That's a Jack Berger level.
Yeah, for a front row particular is incredible.
So I just thought they were a little bit weak.
I want to mention one thing about a Bath player that I made a note of. JJ has totally magical feet, but he treats the ball like it's a giant kidney stone. He just does not want to pass it.
Yeah, very good.
He's what? Pass the ball, JJ! Anyway, and also another thing I noticed, Luke Charter is on a laptop at half time.
Did he?
Doing a bit of Snapchat and doing some emails.
Email.
I don't know.
Some emails, yeah.
I was really so Newcastle, can they get into the top six is a question.
It's a great question. I would want to say yes. I think on the form that they've shown, they could do it.
Yeah, they've got no European challenge going on, really, have they? Or unless they progress through the group stages and start taking it seriously. But there's nothing to worry about there. They've got an advantage over most other teams that come to town because they've got the plastic pitch. They've got Saracens out the way now.
Well, their last three games have been Saracens, Wasps, Bath, who at the start of that run were the top three, and they've picked up 7 points, which is more than most teams will get against those three.
Yeah, there's no reason why not. I just wonder if one of two things... A, their squad won't be deep enough if they pick up a few injuries.
Yeah.
And if whatever they're doing now is fairly novel, if other teams start to work it out in the analysis. And those are two big threats.
The analysis, they're both good points, actually, because a couple of injuries. You lose Cicino. Oh. You lose someone like Mark Wilson.
He must be in for a big deal sometime soon.
Who?
Cicino. So there must be people out there looking at him either from France or even from, like, Haguares.
Well, he's been around, played Rotherham, Nottingham.
Yeah, but he's outstanding.
And then he's been good. He went to Italy for a couple of seasons, so he's been a sort of jobbing solid player.
I seem to think he's about 26,
maybe 28, 29.
Yeah,
so still plenty of time for him. He's playing fantastically.
Yeah, good. Jack on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. Why doesn't a Falcon make the EPS, the England EPS? We talked about Mark Wilson last week.
Yeah,
he'd be worth a shout. As a back row for sure. Elsewhere, I'm not entirely sure who I would sort of go. They're better than what's there.
No, they've got a lot of good. They've got a lot of good players, but not too many truly outstanding players. Mm. Alex Tate and Waldock and Marcus Watson are all good, solid players.
Yeah, Marcus Watson is an interesting one.
Rumoured to be off to Wasps.
Yeah, a little bit older, very, very fast. I think with wingers, it's kind of what they do off the ball rather than, because we all know that they can do stuff on the ball.
Well,
you need to actually look at the tape and work out where his flaws are.
Totally. So, well done, Newcastle. Again, if they could get top six, we're all agreed they could.
They're 4 points off fifth place at the moment.
Yeah, they could. If they did, that would be a massive achievement, but I'm not sure what it would actually mean next year. It might end up much like
more
sales sharks with them. Possibly.
That's what it means. It means more money to build your premiership squad.
It might mean that might be the only means to it, because I can't see them, just like Sale haven't managed to, actually, once they achieve that status in the Champions Cup, being able to spin both plates domestically and in Europe.
You often see in football as well, football's famous for someone getting into the Champions League or Europa and then be in 12th, 15th position the next season because you can't, you don't have the squad depth to fight on both fronts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, well done Newcastle. And Bath, well, that's a really bad run of games. So they've got,
yeah. And if George Ford had slotted his kicks, they would have won.
Oh yeah, there's another thing on this. Blackadder was asked the most ridiculous question, something along the lines of, is George's father or him leaving making him miss kicks, basically? It was like, I can't remember if it's either because his dad's not there, is he missing kicks? Or, I mean, this is an adult man. You know, if he's not thinking about his dad when he's making kicks. Or it was either that, or it was, is the transfer speculation affecting his kicks? And again, he's not weighing up the offers on the table from Sale. Not that second. So it's just such a ridiculous question.
You can't, Tim.
I mean,
I think that would be a really logical, bearing in mind I'd be the person holding the microphone, I would think if George Ford, England's fly half, has an off day on the first week that players are officially allowed to talk to clubs, and he's been heavily linked with a move away to Bath, and Bath have confirmed that he's signalled his intention to not see out his option, then I understand that would be a relevant question. England's number one fly half has an off day, and there's all this stuff going on around him.
Correlation isn't causation.
No, but it's a good way of asking that question, of kind of Trojan horse in that questioning, rather than just saying, where's George going? What's happening?
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, anyway. Where do you want to go to next, Philip?
Well, my other favourite game of the weekend was the one this afternoon. Mm. Sunday afternoon, Wasps versus Leicester, which was, a tale of two halves, very much. The old cliche.
Yeah, well, hang on. Before we get into this, there's been a lot of interviews with Aaron Major this week. Is Aaron Major acting too solemn about the departure of Cockers?
I would almost say the opposite. Did you not hear his interview the other day where he kind of said, I was saying black, he was saying white. We were completely disagreed on the fundamentals of the way our team should be playing.
Yeah, but there's lots of heavy breathing, you know, looking at the floor.
He's probably just fed up with being asked the same question over and over again.
I love how Richard Cockerell's dealt with it. He was magnanimous and really honest, and he was even there. On the day that he left, it wasn't that he just went, right, was someone going to collect my stuff? He went, he said hello, he said goodbye to every player.
Including a 10-minute conversation with Major.
With Major, shook hands, no hard feelings, so he's handled it brilliantly.
Do you think they can really get on well personally? I mean, I'm sure they're both adults, but I just don't know. I'm not sure I'd be man enough to still maintain a good personal relationship.
The word from both camps is they always got on brilliantly. Because they've known each other for years as well. They've always gone on brilliantly personally, but the difference was the fundamental direction that they wanted, the strategy and the game plan that they wanted for that team was fundamentally different. So I would say all the noises, and from what we can see, it's exactly that. They get on very well, but they want to take it in different directions, and they could not get over that barrier.
And I like the honesty of it, because it would have been we'd have been sat here going, well, they've fudged that a little bit, haven't they? Just papered over it, and just swept it under the carpet. If Aaron Major had gone, no, there was no disagreement in the way we talked. Everything was fine. It would have been no. I just think it's really honest.
Yeah. What do you think?
You're allowed to disagree professionally with someone.
What do you think Aaron Major needs to do to keep his job at the end of the season, or do you think it is his job for the next season?
No, I don't think. I think that's one of the reasons they've done it now, because
to look for someone else.
To give them that flexibility. Whereas give Major an opportunity, but you're not tying yourself to that option.
Do you know who?
You can see who else is about and if Major works or not.
So, do you know who the name is making the round for some post in Leicester's rugby department?
Go on,
Martin Johnson.
Yeah,
I've heard that.
Yeah.
This is an awful suggestion.
I'm not sure it is.
Oh, come on.
So Martin Johnson had his time at England. He's not a coach.
No,
he's never done coaching, but he can be, because of his experience, his leadership quality, he can be the bigger picture guy. And you can leave Major to do the coaching.
Yeah, but what is the bigger picture guy? This is where...
Well, no, but I think Leicester's a really unique club in this sense. Look, they have tried to separate themselves from that traditional Leicester DNA of someone who's got the history with the club as a player. They have tried to do that before, Heineke Meyer. And the, what was the, Lazada? No.
Oh, Mario Lafreda.
Lafreda.
Is it Mario Lafreda? Why did you make that up?
It might be.
Definitely Lafreda.
Lafreda.
Yeah, so do you want to know a story about Lafreda?
Well, no, so okay. those two opportunities, they tried to take a different type of direction. Both times, it doesn't work. I think there's something about Leicester where someone who's got that kind of DNA running through them makes a big difference. And I think I agree with Phil that I think if you can draw the line,
yeah,
so it's, no, it's your ship and I'm just going to oversee and we'll, they'd have to agree on the philosophy for it to work.
So there is a lot to be said for embracing your history, definitely. But actually, when you say the bigger picture guy has got even more responsibility on him and more complex tasks than the actual coach himself. You know, you're going to have things like, well, first and foremost, you're in charge of picking the players from other clubs, and then things like salary cap. These now are jobs for professionals. It is not you bring back the ex-captain who is a good guy who can give a rousing speech. And as for leadership qualities, it doesn't work like that because you're either a director of rugby dealing with the numbers, or you're a coach dealing with the, you know, with the players. You can't be a director of rugby and then walk into the change room and then give a rousing speech. This role just doesn't exist.
But you can, because they're not, the director of rugby is never completely detached from the players, but he just doesn't do the day-to-day coaching.
Mm.
It all depends where you define those boundaries.
See, if I was a head coach, I wouldn't want the director of rugby anywhere near the team if I was doing the day-to-day coaching and picking of the side. You can't be both.
I think, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I don't think Ben Kay is a board member, I think, at Tigers.
Is he?
Yeah, so I can see something like that for Martin Johnson, sure, but not a director of rugby. I think it's a step too far.
Now, what's your Lafreda story, Marcelo?
Oh yeah, Marcelo Lafreda. Yeah, apparently when he came, his most frequent drill was Canterbury Squares.
Which one's Canterbury Squares?
So do you know, like, you've got, you know, you kind of line up opposite people. And then
you run corner to corner.
Oh yeah,
and then apparently under a mini rugby drills.
Yeah,
truck and trailer, that kind of thing.
Apparently they did this for hours on end. there was no strategy, no nothing. And after 6 months, he got fired.
And it's not game specific, that kind of stuff as well. It doesn't relate. It's okay to get your hands warmed up, but anyway, Lafreda.
There you go.
So the game.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but there's a game, wasn't there?
There was a game.
what a game!
Yeah, it was played at some pace. I mean, straight from the off, it was just relentless. Kind of looping back to what I said earlier about Newcastle keeping Bath within range, I think the biggest criticism here is on Wasps. Yes, they won it, but I don't think they were far enough out of range. I don't think, for all the praise about their great rugby, and it is great rugby, they didn't get enough points from it. In fact, I look at it, it's kind of like a fighter that had punched themselves out, and then second half, they were just hanging on.
Yeah, they were. They played that first half at a million miles an hour. But the way they played was, it was high risk, it was offloading, it was out the back door, it was spreading it wide right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And it paid dividends. They scored three tries, but for all that territory and possession, they could have scored more, and they had a few opportunities that they knocked on, and they had turned over the ball deep into Leicester's 22. So yeah, it's a very good point. They could have been, if they'd finished off two more chances that they created, could have been completely out of sight.
Yeah, I think first off they should have been in about five. They should have run in about five tries.
But the halftime team talk for Major, his first sole team talk, and they were getting absolutely pumped in that first half.
Yeah,
they had very little attacking ball that they did anything consistently with. It was all Wasps, three tries to nil at that stage. And Leicester turned it around tremendously.
I wonder. Okay, well, yeah, Leicester have not been a good defensive team all year.
Nope.
I mean, that's fair to say. I've forgotten where I was going to go with this. Oh, yeah. So when it panned over to Major in his little BT break, when they put the mic in his face, he said something very telling, which he thinks they were all right with ball in hand, just like Sale. And it's because of that, because they still had that attacking game, that they're okay. So I think, actually, for the new major style of rugby, all they need really is just that tightening up on D, and that'll basically be it.
At Rugby Podcast, Tom Dow on Twitter says, will Christian Wade's finishing / speed ever be enough to outweigh his defensive frailties for England?
Well, it already has. I mean, whether it'll be enough for Eddie Jones, I don't know.
No, for me. We've seen him score some tremendous tries, and he's so dangerous.
What if, though, but right?
You mentioned it a couple of weeks. He is feast and famine.
Yeah.
And that he was completely anonymous for the whole of that second half after being excellent in the first half. And he's done it for whole games and games on end this season. He scores 6 tries and then does nothing for 3 games.
And since he's come back, Jack Noel's just shown what a complete attacking and defensive winger does.
Jack Noel, Rocket Aguni, Anthony Watson will be interesting to see when he's back.
Rocket Aguni's step was just filthy.
Yeah, Rocket Aguni was incredible.
Yeah, he is.
Best player on the Leicester team today?
McCaffrey.
Yeah, probably.
McCaffrey was very good.
Close.
Tankor did very well until his stupid yellow card, both in the tight and in the loose. Ellis Genge was exceptional.
Ellis Genge was showing
what he needs to show to be an international loose head.
Yeah, no, we had this discussion watching the game. Is it time to move on from Marcus Iota? Free up some calorie room.
Yes. Dean Luxford.
Salary room.
Dean Luxford tweeted at Rugby Podcast just a moment ago. What Ellis Genge's performance today? He looked like a potential superstar. Yeah, he's looking better. He's looking great.
His work rate was absolutely outstanding.
It's still baffling why Bristol wanted to get rid of him. I mean, I wonder if we'll ever find out what went on there.
Your suggestions to our Rugby Podcast. Tom Brady had a great game today.
Tom Brady worked very, very hard. His little chip and chase was very good as well.
Yeah.
He played very well.
So we can't judge Leicester yet, but there are some promising signs in terms of their attitude. But again, it's still a loss on the road. Wasps, again, keep the wagons rolling and are still top of the Avicii Premiership. So fair play.
19 games at the Rico unbeaten in all competitions.
Very impressive.
For Wasps.
Very impressive.
And, well, that's only the second point that they've dropped at home this season, as in...
Wow!
So out of a potential...
This season, the 19 is a consecutive.
But this season in the Premiership, they played 7 games at home, I think. So potential 35.
I think it's the same score for the calendar year. I think it's the same for the calendar year. They've only twice now have they not got but a bonus try point. Bonus tries. So it's like 100 and something points out of. Anyway, that was the calendar year 2016. So yeah, obviously that only happened once then. Anyway, do you want to keep talking about games? Do we want to move on to if we go into Saracens and then off the back of that. Bring up the first weekend of
the new protocols.
The new protocols, the world directives.
Yeah, okay.
On the tackle.
That sounds reasonable.
So it's quite rare that you draw a game and feel like you've won, but Saracens, it's just. It was quite good. Alex Sanderson, who we've talked about before, is a very good talker. He just said he's endlessly surprised and proud at how tough mentally that team is. And they showed their
I think he's deservedly proud too. The thing I took most out of this game is what great shape England are in, because they've got two players who I am now starting to think are basically one and the same. Would you like to guess who?
Two players that are one and the same.
Yeah, they're doing very similar things.
Yeah, Lazowski and Slade.
Lazowski and Slade?
I would say... No, I actually don't know what you're talking about.
Itoje and Noel, right?
Right, okay.
Itoje and Noel, okay. They are both playing positions which don't generally affect the game that much. But between the two of them, they are influencing games so incredibly well. I said last week, I can't remember seeing a second row influence the game quite as much as Itoje. And thinking about it, I'm not sure I've seen a winger influence the game quite as much as Jack Noel over the last few weeks.
I was going to say, particularly the game at the Rec. His
work rate.
Once or twice is fine. But to do it time and time again, And the other parallel that I'll draw between the two of them is they might not be the best at their actual position. As in, like, Noel might not be the fastest, Todgy's not the biggest, they might not be the best specialist lock or wing, but as general rugby players, they are both absolutely outstanding.
Mm. And they're... Another good thing about the term, another parallel, their decision-making, their intelligence, and in all kinds of different situations, you see them reading the game and just almost... knowing where to be before anyone else would and reacting before anyone
another
else would.
Another parallel, they both look better without facial hair. So Jack, yeah. I'll sort it out. They both wear scrum caps. Although Maro Itoji wasn't wearing a scrum cap, was he?
He wasn't. Was he not? The whole game. It was definitely towards the end.
Maro with a scrum cap is better than Maro without a scrum cap.
Definitely.
From his performance, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely learned that.
I also think the other thing that this might lead to for both of them is maybe a position change. To get more involved in more things. So Maro to the back row.
Yeah,
potentially Noel.
They're both versatile as well.
I don't want Noel. We talked about this last week. I don't want Noel at fullback.
No, I tend to agree with you there.
Yeah. I would also agree. He's got more license to
roam.
Yeah. To pop up where he needs to, which he invariably does when he's playing wing.
Hmm. Anything controversial in this game?
Anything happened that was controversial or any sort of other talking point? So it was a draw, and it's weird, Exeter coming away from Allianz Park with 2 points. I think they would have taken that before the game.
Yes.
But they'll see it as an opportunity missed, no question. The red card then. So firstly, we all hope Jeff Parling's okay.
He'll be fine.
And it was good to see him up and about on the bench after being stretched off.
The worrying thing about Jeff Parling is he has a concussion history as well.
He does.
Which I just remembered.
He does. Yeah. Secondly, I think it's worth pointing out that we will all have slightly differing opinions on the new tackle laws and all the rest of it. I think we all appreciate the intention. The intention is to make the game safer.
No, it's not.
We hope.
No, it's not.
That what's motivated all this is an intention to make the game safer and player welfare. I do worry and wonder if there's a little bit more going on than just player welfare, quote unquote, and if it's actually trying to minimise future lawsuits. But we can't. That's only speculation. So what do you mean? What do you mean when you say that it's not?
It's not. This is not about player welfare. It's very similar. It's about being seen to care about player welfare. They're two completely different things. It's like the law hasn't just. I can't remember the actual saying. Something like the law isn't just to be done. It's to be seen to be done. Okay, and that's what this is.
I completely disagree.
No,
with that.
This is not making the game safer in any way.
No. Just because it's not, it doesn't mean the intentions aren't to do it.
It absolutely does. Okay?
So you think their intentions are not to make the game safer?
Absolutely right. I think the intention is to be seen to be making the game
safer. But not actually make it safer.
Oh, no, correct. I'm sure if they thought that what they were doing would also make the game safer. I'm sure I don't think they're proactively saying, let's not make it safer. We're speculating on what potential lawsuits there might be down the road and how that might motivate different decisions. Let's just assume then, for the purpose of this, let's just assume there's nothing more to the reason to bring these in now, mid-season, other than purely player welfare and nothing else, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, we all understand, and we're all on board with that.
But we know it's
as
not
an intention.
We know it's not player welfare. What they're doing as an employer is taking reasonable steps within the sports to reduce risk. It's basically just an employment thing.
Okay. Let's put that to one side. So, Jeff Parling's got into contact. He has clocked a face full of fist and forearm. Not intentionally from Brad Barrett, carelessly on Brad Barrett's part.
Reckless is the right word there.
It
is by the very definition of world rugby's reckless. It is reckless.
Yeah. Okay. So firstly, let's also just draw some lines under this. On the basis of the new directives, it was a red card for
on the basis of the old directives.
Richard Barrington. No. On the basis of the new directives, it is a red card for Richard Barrington, and the referee made the right decision. The only decision that was available to him, given the evidence that he saw.
Yes, actually, I think you're right there. I think you're right.
Well, you've got... There's two incidents, and there's two questions for me. One is, did the ref apply the law correctly? And two, then, which is probably the question that you two want to get into, is the law correct?
No.
I think the law has been applied correctly.
Yeah.
So first question, has the law been applied correctly for the Barrington incident?
Yeah.
It was, ignoring everything else, it was no arm, shoulder to the head, that is a red card.
Yeah.
So it was applied correctly.
I wouldn't describe it as no arm.
The ref described it as no arm.
So we're sat doing the referee's assessment thing going, yes, that was the correct decision and you applied the law correctly. Well done, tick.
The other part of the incident, before we get to the second question, is the Barrett
Now he didn't ignore that and say there's nothing to see with the Barrett thing. What he actually said to his TMO is, I'm going to focus on the more severe action. So he didn't say Brad Barrett has got nothing. He said, I'm only going to give one card here and this most serious one I need to deal with is Barrington. So
yeah, I would actually disagree with that, as in I think the Barrett one was the more serious one. But I'm happy there wasn't two red cards.
The Barrett one causes the second one, in my mind.
Yeah.
He kind of knocks him off his step.
Well, I think
Parling was going into a crouched position anyway.
The big difference is, under the new directives, I believe it's right, because the Barrington accidental...
We're all agreed.
Under the old directives, I think the red belongs to Barrett.
I don't think Barrett would have been given a red card before this weekend.
Oh, I think he would have.
No way. Absolutely
would have.
We have seen similar ones in the past. Yeah. We saw the Hartley one a few weeks ago.
Yeah, if Hartley's a red...
If Hartley's a red, that's a red. And we also saw the Luamanu one, which is the equivalent of the Barrington one, which... 8 weeks ago was a red card.
And actually, we've seen two.
Yeah, we've seen two equivalent incidents under the old.
So the second question and the main one, and let's not try go too long about this. Yeah. But is the law correct?
No.
No, I emphatically say no.
Absolute false. Let's just think. There's been Ellis. There's been Garvey. There's been Haskell. I think have I counted five concussions this weekend from players tackling low?
Hips and knees, right?
Hitting
heads.
Now, it doesn't take a genius. If someone with the low IQ of myself can sit here and say, oh, hang on, tackling low tends to knock out players, the higher-ups in world rugby can also see tackling low knocks out players. It's far, far more serious. If they're worried about being seen to apply the law and being seen to make changes so they don't get sued, I would say quite the opposite. You're aware of the risks, you're aware of what happens when you tackle really, really low, and yet you still manage to implement a bunch of directives which have resulted in more concussions. Concussions will go up, not down. This is the most cynical law change I think I've ever seen.
I think misguided might be the
cynical.
Right word.
No, because these guys are far brighter than me, and this is what they've come up with.
They've reacted to the situation, and they've put in place a law that may well increase the incident of concussion for the tackler, who was already the most at risk party.
Yeah,
by the world.
Was it like 78% of concussions are the tackler?
72%.
It's ridiculous.
Occur to the tackler.
Yeah,
not the tackled man.
I mean, if anything, making shots a little bit higher would be a bit safer. And what I mean by that is things like the choke tackle. By the way, well done, Ireland. I mean, if you want to get something banned, call it the choke tackle. And while we're at it, why don't we call jackling for the ball, I don't know, ball raping or something. You know? If you want something banned, call it something stupid. There's no collision. You're holding on, you're not butting heads, so on and so forth. There are very few concussions from something like the choke tackle. Yeah, it's gone.
I would put it like this, and let's bring in the other decision that's relevant to this particular thing is Reedy for Ulster in the Scarlets Ulster game, where I think it was Alex Davies.
Yep. Yeah, the
replacement,
nine.
The replacement scrum half, diving for a try. Alex Reedy, the covering defender, tackles Alex Davies at Reedy's waist height.
Yeah.
But because Davies is diving for the line, that makes contact around the neck slash shoulder area. If he doesn't make that tackle, it's a score. And he makes the tackle at his own waist height. He gets a yellow card, penalty try. I don't know what else Reedy can do. And again, Barrington, it's very easy. And I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, he could have avoided that. I'm telling you,
Barrington
Colne. If you've played the game, Barrington cannot avoid that contact. So I will just briefly say this. What's happened is we now have a set of laws where players can have honest intentions, cannot be reckless, can use an appropriate safe technique, can be coached to avoid situations that might result in these new laws being applied, and try actively to avoid something like that happening, and the outcome can still be a red card. That cannot be right, and that's what we have.
Yep.
It's the recklessness that causes it, though. If they are reckless.
Reckless? Barrington doesn't do anything reckless.
Because of his position. So he goes in with a shoulder. And yeah, where?
Because how else do you tackle? That's how every tackle is made.
But if Barrington is ankle height or knee height or hip height, it's not. Yeah. Barrington was upright.
Barrington was not upright. He was.
He was upright.
Parling was falling.
Parling was perpendicular. Yeah, horizontal.
No, Barrington
from
was upright. Barrington was still upright.
Right, so
was Parling's waist height.
This is kind of where I'm in between. Okay. Barrington will make the majority of his tackles, because he's a big lad, not by diving at ankles and wrapping, by basically just going chest to chest and just wrapping. That's what big lads do.
Yeah.
And he wasn't actually, as the referee said, he was making, he was leading with the shoulder and making a forceful contact. Actually, Barrington's just a big bloke, and so he stopped Parling dead. But actually, Barrington was not moving forward. He was static in a tackling position.
The Barrington one is a bad example because of the incident, because Parling was already concussed, or he's already unconscious by the time he hit Barrington.
Yeah, I just hate this. The
Reedy one. So the thing I'm most concerned about is defending the try line.
Yeah.
And I was so pleased to watch the Bath Newcastle game on Friday night, where there was long periods of defence on both try lines and not a yellow card given, and players and attackers and defenders both going low. The Reedy one, I think, is a bad example. Because Reedy is out of position in two ways. One, he's offside.
Well,
you can't make a tackle if you're offside. If he makes a legal tackle...
Yeah, but that's for the referee to judge offside.
No, but if he makes a legal tackle from that position, it's a penalty try anyway.
Mm.
Because he's offside, he's out of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
But from the position that he's in, the only way he can actually make contact is by the headshot. And so,
because Alex Davies is diving
for the line. Yeah,
with his head first.
It's like, I'll give you an equivalent. Johnny May is accelerating away from you. The only way maybe not you, maybe me or Tim. He's accelerating away from. He's accelerating from me or Tim. The only way we could stop him is a football full length lunge and trip him up. That's the only way you can stop a try. But you give away a yellow card and a penalty try. Do you do it?
No.
Well, the Reedy is exactly the same situation.
No.
It is, because the only way he could stop the try was with a headshot.
Yeah, well...
What?
No, the only way he could stop the try from the position that he was in, out of position.
It sounds like you're saying that Reedy was reckless.
No, I'm saying... No. Well, he was reckless because he made a headshot.
Yeah. Well, Phil is saying is it can't be stopped.
Scenario, because Reedy... If Reedy was in a head-on position and he can dive at his leg, if he was in the right position...
You can't stop it.
Yeah, but,
you can't necessarily.
So
you're
basically
saying
that the it's Reedy's fault for not being fully onside and directly in front of the player.
No,
that it was a penalty try.
It's Reedy's fault.
Yeah, the only way he could have stopped that try was a high tackle.
It's not right, but that is exactly
the
right.
Only way he could have stopped that try was an illegal act.
I'm confused.
Yeah. No, wait, what don't you understand about that? The only way you could have stopped that try was an illegal act.
I'm confused at what your point is.
There is no way out of this.
That scenario is a really bad one.
Yeah.
And that's not the scenario that we have been complaining about the tackles. Because there were lots of examples in the Bath-Newcastle game where there were these players going head-on, very low, that was refereed sensibly, I would say. The penalties weren't given.
Here's the major problem.
The Reedy one is very different to the rest of it.
The interpretations are going to be a nightmare for refs, and I don't envy them one bit. I think actually the people who have been screwed over the most are actually the officials after you deliver this awful directive. The second thing is just how token it is. You know, when they are so blowhardy and so sanctimonious, we want to say that the head is a no-go area. Yeah, well done. Congratulations.
Let's penalise attackers who like Jeff Parling did, bend down head first into a tackle. I'm not saying that, but this is my point. This is my point. This is actually, I'm not saying that should happen for a second, but this is kind of my point. I don't know.
So can we all agree that we're in favour of the new directives?
Yeah. I
did like Dean Richards' take on it. after the game.
What was that?
He said, well, he said it's not new laws, it's new sanctions. And yeah, he was kind of, justifying his position, he'd had a game that had been refereed very sensibly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he said he doesn't think it'll have a major change. Doesn't think it'll have a major impact.
We can judge it a couple of months' time. Yeah. I hope, on the basis of this weekend, I think I'm with Mark McCall, where it could to some degree wreck games and the game.
It's going to increase concussions.
So as players, we've all played at varying levels, but we all as players, top to bottom in any league, we put our trust in lawmakers and referees to minimise avoidable issues with safety.
Yeah.
Right? When lawmakers try and minimise unavoidable issues, then it changes the game in a way. And I think you saw this weekend in certain examples, you can't take away that there are some unavoidable risks and safety issues, which you can't try. If you try and put sanctions on them, you ruin games. And we could be left with an overanalyzed husk of a game. And that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
As much as I do understand wanting to get the game safe, I think there's definitely a balance. I think it's just gone way too far.
So referees, watch the Bath Newcastle game. Watch the Wasps Leicester game, where the only yellow card was for a cynical slap out of the nine's hand by Dan Cole.
That was idiotic.
Moronic.
Yeah, moronic it was. Yeah. Well, we could have the era of like pick and go.
That would be
head down rugby.
That would be glorious.
You'd love it. Not everyone else would love
it. It'd just be such a glorious kind of backlash. You know, when it's one of these things. Do you know when they change tax law, and they're like, right, so we've changed the tax law, everyone will start paying tax, and then they come up with a completely new, even worse tax loophole than they did first time round, or people stop going to work or something like that. This is what's going to happen. All the purists are going to say, oh, we'll have offloading rugby. Wrong.
Well, is what everyone thought. That's what people were hoping. Oh, this is going to lead to offloading rugby. I think it could lead to head down rugby a little bit.
No, it's going to lead to 5 foot enormous head players.
Yeah. Picking and going.
I think Mark McCall's general thrust of his point is kind of where my sentiment's at the minute. And I think what he was getting at was, let's not mess with the integrity of what in rugby a red card represents. And in rugby, we've all grown up with a red card representing foul play, deliberately dirty play, stuff that you think's vile, unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And I think possibly what's happening is and I don't want to use the F word, football, but in the way that it has happened with football, what a red card represents is now very, very different to what it used to represent. And I don't want to get there with rugby.
I mean, it wasn't until I was about 16 and I'd been playing the game a few years, I even knew that cards existed. I wasn't even sure that we had cards. So, yeah, you're completely right there.
Yeah.
So should we do something a bit lighter after that heavy stuff?
Yeah.
So I've got a Who Am I?
Do you know what? We all, it makes us so angry. We all broadly agreed, but we just like to shout at each other.
Yeah.
That's how angry we were.
Sometimes you just need to feel that you're alive, don't you?
Yeah.
I like you guys, but I'm going to take out the frustration on you, on both of you.
This is like, what was it, Ed Norton / Brad Pitt had Fight Club.
Oh, yeah.
We have egg chasers just to come and vent.
Let's go down to some.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Underground lair, love. It'll be a couple of hours.
We'll be in the rugby dungeon. Just getting it out of our system.
What's our lighter activity, Phil?
Right, I've got a trilogy of Who Am I's. Now, I've done these in the past where once you guess, you're out, but we're going to slightly change the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Once you make a guess,
yep,
the other person gets two free clues, then the opportunity to make a guess.
Right.
And then you're back in.
Right. So it's now open. It's still an advantage to have an early guess, potentially.
Potentially, but yeah. the other player
But you're not being penalised too badly.
Yeah. Because otherwise you just wait till the end.
That's a very well thought out sanction.
It's a very fair solution, isn't it?
I like that law directive that you've brought in for this.
I'm a lawmaker. Right. First one.
Okay.
I am a former rugby union international. My wife, Mona, is a dentist. I was expecting Tim to get it on that one.
Okay.
I can or could bench press more than 150 kilograms. Eddie Jones once commented that I should be an Olympic sprinter rather than a rugby player.
Bloody hell.
I have played for the Bulls and Toulon.
Tim.
Yes.
Extra university.
Is it Juan Smith?
Incorrect.
Damn it.
What were the two teams?
The Bulls and Toulon.
Two guesses.
Okay.
So you got two more clues.
Okay.
I have.
No, he gets two guesses.
Sorry. No, two more clues.
Oh, right.
Then a guess.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Yeah, that's even better than what I thought.
Two more clues. Yeah, two more clues, then a guess. I have more than 100 caps for my national team.
Okay.
I retired.
Oh, I know it.
After the 2011 Rugby World Cup.
So
you get a guess?
Gwaki's Botha?
Incorrect.
Ah!
I am Brian Habana.
Incorrect.
Oh,
Jay
no!
gets two more clues.
Oh, no.
After a 2-year absence, I returned to the game.
Okay.
I am a second row.
Ah.
What? 2-year absence? Hang on. Have I not just said Victor Matfield?
No.
Is it Victor Matfield?
Victor Matfield is correct.
Oh! Thank God. I was going to go with Danny Rousseau then.
1-0.
Oh, sorry, Danny Brusso. Hang on, which is Karate Kid?
Russo is the Russo is the South African and Toulon.
Daniel LaRusso.
Yeah, yeah. Tell you what, just a small spelling mistake, and it could be a very different match.
Yeah.
LaRusso, you're on. What?
1-0 to JB. Second question. I am a current international rugby player. I am considered quite big for my position, at 6'1" and 100 kilograms. I've spent time playing Super Rugby and in the top 14 amongst other leagues. I made my international debut aged 19 in 2005.
Okay, quick bit of maths.
I am the all-time leading point scorer for my nation. My hero and inspiration is not Jonathan Beardmore.
Oh, okay, weird.
It's Johnny Wilkinson, and I've had the opportunity to work with him as a kicking coach at Toulon. I became a household name during the 2015 Rugby World Cup.
Well, hang on. Did you say he's big or small for his size?
He's big for his position. 6'1", 100 kg. But you don't know his position.
100. What? Okay.
Tim,
is it?
It must be. I'm thinking top point scorer for your country. There can't be many people there. So
JB knows.
So, but he's not. Lee Halfpenny's not that big. But Lee Halfpenny.
JB knows.
So Tim's guess, Lee Halfpenny,
which is wrong,
is incorrect.
Just give me a few more clues, but I think I know where I'm going.
So you've got
this
two
one.
More clues.
Yep. No, you've said, oh, I know who it is. Go on.
I've got this one.
No.
Well, just if you're so confident, do it now.
Okay. I am the tier 2 all-time record international point scorer.
I'm not sure now. I was going to say...
Oh, I know who it is! Oh, right, you'll guess.
Hernandez.
Okay.
Hernandez is incorrect.
I am Goromaru.
Is correct.
Oh, yeah! God damn it.
I was inspirational in my country's historic win against the Springboks of the 2015. I play for Japan.
When did he play Super Rugby?
Played for the Reds.
Of course. Did he actually play?
Yeah, he did. He played a handful of games.
God
like he has done
it.
At Toulon.
Oh, good one. So it's down to the final one.
Tiebreaker.
Come on.
I am a former international rugby union player. Former.
Standard.
I won the majority of my caps in one position, but also 13 caps in a different position.
Mm-hmm. Different positions or different position?
Different position.
Okay.
I am from the Southern Hemisphere.
Okay.
But I have spent some time playing in Europe. When in Europe, I played in England as well as France. I'm still working in the game in a management position at a Super Rugby team. I captained my country to a successful victory against the British and Irish Lions.
Who the hell was it? Who was the captain? Oh, goodness me. Do you want to start again?
I am John Smith.
John Smith is correct.
Oh, yes!
Good win.
Come on.
Very good.
Which Super Rugby side is he with?
Sharks, I think he is.
Oh, fair play.
I was thinking Larkham, but then... Oh, I wasn't sure if he kept... Never mind. Useless.
Very good. So 2-1.
Oh, good game.
Winter term.
Good game.
Devastated. Absolutely devastated.
Should we briefly talk, as we're talking about people moving to different roles and all the rest of it, Cocker's quickly to Toulon?
Yeah, nice move.
That was really quick as well.
Great almost move like, for Cocker's.
Almost like they knew it was coming.
Brilliant, isn't it? Come have 4 months on the south of France while you, you know, weigh up all the various offers that will come your way. He's a fluent French speaker.
Ah.
Yeah, he's from the time
because he spent a couple of years at, was it Clermont or Cast?
Sure it's Clermont, but when they used to be called...
Montferrand.
Montferrand. Yes. What were they called that? Do we know why they changed?
I don't know. I think it might have been. Was it an amalgamation of two clubs? I don't know.
Answers on postcards.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to have a dolphin, didn't they? As a... Was that? Oh,
it's the rugby section of multi-sport club AS Montferrand, so Clermont. So the full title is Association Sportive Montferrand Clermont Auvergne.
Oh yes, it's ASM. That when are their Twitter?
Yeah, ASM.
So yeah, brilliant. And I think and any suggestion that some people might have gone, oh well, Cocker and George Ford never got on, so Mike Ford won't get on with him. Well, I think Mike Ford can see the benefit of it.
I don't think that was the case, was it?
I think there was a couple of comments some people pointed that thought that Cocker's had made after he'd gone to Bath.
Was this when?
Oh yeah, they were not happy about it.
No.
I mean, like, you know, he was their prized possession, yeah. And he'd played a losing role in a Premiership final. I think it was against Harlequins, either Harlequins or Saracens. But you know, you've got an 18-19 year old playing fly half. You don't want you. It's safe to say you don't want to lose him.
Yeah.
So,
presumably Leicester would have got the academy credits for George Ford.
Don't know.
I know he travelled about. Yeah. But.
Yeah. So it is a weird one actually because I would assume that Cocker's didn't have a great relationship with Ford Senior purely because of that transfer, because obviously it was orchestrated by Mike Ford.
Yeah,
I wonder if the sweetest of all ironies, though, we get to the end of the season, and Bougelaar says, "Do you know what? I can't quite like this Cocker character to be the head man."
Yeah,
slightly hook, Mike.
It was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah,
Mike Ford. Do not go on holiday.
Mike Ford. He's being Mike Forded.
That'd never happen to me. Surely no one else would ever do that.
I do the usurping. I don't get usurped.
Exactly.
I bet Castro was glad that he moved on in good time. Because that's someone who definitely doesn't get on with Cockerell. I do wonder if, like, everyone talks about Richard Cockerell being, you know, real salt of the earth, hard working. He's all about honesty with players and grafting and all the rest of it with his forward pack. I think he might be in for a little bit of a shock with the culture in Toulon. Might
yes.
He? See you Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bring your flipboard.
We'll see. Anyway, really good. Really good. Might be going down to interview him next
Ooh,
weekend.
Ooh, that is exciting.
With the Sale Leicester game. I don't know. It's Leicester. Too long game.
So, yeah, Sale Toulon.
I can't stop thinking about Richard Cockerell as a Leicester guy.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to watching the best team of ball in hand in Europe?
Toulon haven't been that good.
Yeah.
Another bit of Leicester news that broke last week.
Mm-hmm.
Tuilagi. Confirmed on Monday or Tuesday.
Out for the season.
Out for, yeah, well, somewhere between 6 and 9 months they're talking about.
Oh, money well spent.
The guy cannot catch a break.
Well, the problem is he catches too many, mate. Is it a surprise? Is it really a shock?
It's not massively shocking given the last 3 years. It's just
miserable, isn't it?
So disappointing. And speaking from someone who spent a lot of time being injured, it is. It's so frustrating. And I remember coming back from months on the sideline with an ankle injury, got back to fitness, got back to some form, played maybe 6 or 7 games, and then did my shoulder, AC joint in my left shoulder, and was out for the rest of the season. I'd missed the first few months of the season.
Is there something physiological, do you think, with some humans where they're more prone? And I don't understand why they're more prone to it. Is
some
it...
people are more injury prone.
Yeah, 100%.
The reason behind it, no idea.
Oh, no.
Too Lange, I can imagine it's just that his muscles are too strong to keep themselves attached to his bones.
Yeah, me and Tuilagi, definitely.
You say it jokingly, but I do think there's something in that. Yeah, this is just a just a throwaway theory, okay? But I think that players who are in extremely good shape, well conditioned, they must have additional stresses that fatties like me don't. So if you look at in like a Premiership squad, you might have the natural guy who is like 6-7 in the second row, never picks up an injury because he doesn't have to be in any shape, isn't particularly well conditioned, but the conditioned guys always tend to. And one of the things I was most upset about with the Tuilagi thing is he's come back so much smaller.
Lean and mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that lack of extra mass might actually help him.
Yeah.
Shows what I know.
Yeah.
So,
it's frustrating from all angles because we've not seen him, we've not seen the Tuilagi that we saw before 2013 for 3.5 years.
Mm.
It's just so frustrating.
Because he's, as well.
No matter who you support, whether you're an England fan, whether you're a Leicester fan, he is or was 3+ years ago one of the most talented players on the planet, one of the most disruptive, abrasive, talented all-round players. So it's frustrating.
Does he need a could he do with joining up with Cockerell and Ford on the south of France for their magic rejuvenating powers?
It might not be a bad move from I think France. I think a change of scenery would do him the world of good. He's still only 24. He's been surrounded by England and all the English pressure and all the injury pressure. And every time he comes back, it's like a big, it's pretty much a bank holiday. So I think I actually think if he went away and kind of rehabbed and found his form for the next 2 years in a French club, it's not a terrible idea.
I think a French club or certainly somewhere on the south coast where it is a little bit more relaxed. Yeah, like JB says, I think that would be a great, great move for him. It would be a great move for Leicester. I do not think that Richard Cockerell will be putting his hand up. He's been bitten by that snake once already. Well, a few times already.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he does. I think he needs to get away and do something different.
Let's stay in France for a second, because Racing, in that rearranged game against Munster, which rearranged after the death of Anthony Foley, of course, they got pumped in Paris. Absolutely humped by Munster.
Destroyed. This was so one-sided, I didn't even bother getting to the end of it. I didn't learn anything new about this game, about any of the players. Colin Murray's class, knew that. I did learn he's got a much better kicking. The thing about Colin Murray that I learn every time I watch him is how much better he is than I originally thought.
He just keeps getting better.
He's just an incredible... incredible player.
I'd recommend anyone has a little look at Ronan O'Gara's post-match chat. Very, very honest. And one particular quote I've got here, he said, "The scary part is we have to go back to Thomond Park. That could get embarrassing." He looked dejected, utterly just frustrated. And also, I noticed that he's talking like he was separate from the players and other coaches. He was sort of talking like, in a funny way, it was like speaking about it very much from kind of an outside perspective. Like
when they go to Munster,
I know what the answers are. No, he's probably going. It sounded like someone who's going, "No one's listening to me, and it's all going wrong. No one's paying me any attention. No one's doing what I want. They all think they know better, and I'm only completely speculating.
And
now,
I guess that is...
if you watch it, I think you'll see what I mean.
Yeah, and I guess the real test for him is not when it's going great with all its superstars, but you know, times like this.
But to go from finalists in two competitions, winning one of them, losing the other, to just out of all of it is.
Well, yeah.
Leicester v Racing next week.
And they're ninth in the top 14 at the moment.
Yeah,
missing their golden goose. Massive goosen. Difference.
Golden goosen.
Exactly.
Oosen.
Yeah,
that can't be good, can it? Having that kind of disruption. Apparently, you sign him for €560,000 a season.
Yeah. By the way, that kicked in on Monday.
What did
his new contract kicked in on Monday?
He's a commercial director of
his new big contract with Racing kicked in on Monday.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Didn't show up to work. Legend.
Well, Racing have been very careful with that. They've been saying all the time he's still registered for Europe, he's still available for selection. They've been very careful.
So they're still paying him, though?
Yeah, they've been very careful to keep him.
They will pay him until... So they're going to go through the courts, aren't they? Yeah. Until they get the decision that it is a breach of contract on his part, which would... Presumably there'll be a termination clause on.
So what's he doing on his? How? Not that anyone cares about this who isn't in this room, but if they're paying him, right?
Yeah.
And he's paying tax on that money. Say PAYE doesn't exist in France, right? But if he is getting taxed on that money, and then he's found to be in breach of contract, does he get to give all that money back, plus the tax plus damages?
Probably just the money plus damages and the.
What about the tax?
Well, it's taken off at Racing's end, isn't it?
No, it'll be taken off on his end. If I pay you €1 million in France, you write them a cheque for €500,000, you keep the other half, and then I see you for that million back.
We don't need to know the tax situation.
Is that time of the year, Phil? Anyone self-employed or in that sort of area, this is the time of year where you start thinking about tax. Dave Jackson's just tweeted us to @RugbyPodcast, and just a little bit of light relief after that. Following on from JB's rant about hipsters and vinyl.
I've just seen this.
There is a new type of restaurant, and this has popped up in Soho, JB.
Is this Soho London or Soho New York?
Soho London. It only sells... crisps and dips, and it's called Hip Chips. It sells different types of crisps.
Weirdly, this sounds right down my street. Probably my favourite food is crisps. Let's have a look at that.
They do look very good crisps.
Hip Chips.
I'm not completely adverse to this.
I'm very hungry at the moment.
Yeah.
They look incredible.
We need to see some more hipster clientele inside it to get JB angry. Some lads in beanies and...
Where was I the other day which made me angry?
Carhartt cord trousers and...
Yeah, it'll come back to me. I was very angry somewhere that I was... Oh, no, hang on. I'll tell you later. How about some transfer speculation, gents?
Go on.
Right, so we spoke about Owen Williams last week, didn't we?
To Gloucester.
Gloucester. 400K is the rumoured amount.
Big money, that.
They're also linked with Matt Todd. Comes out today in the rugby paper. Neil Fistler put it in his column.
Right, I didn't have that one. Oh, we did have Rapava Ruskin and before him. Yeah. But that's
which I do think there's probably been discussions, but they seem pretty set at seven.
Yeah.
Tell us after the pod.
Nope. Mime it. Do it in a charade fashion.
No one's finding out any more about that chat. although, in lighter news, of course, the George Ford thing looks almost more certain than it ever has before, which is fantastic for everyone.
To sale?
Yeah.
Fantastic for everyone except George Ford?
No, absolutely not. Do you see him this weekend?
His bank balance.
Huh?
Yeah, his bank balance would be very good.
Oh,
it's
going to be great for the entire prem.
Do you think he'll just sign for a year and then take his pick of anywhere else?
No, maybe actually. I don't think that's a terrible suggestion, but I think there's enough going on in Sale to keep him committed to three. I would say, maybe two with an option. Mm. I was looking at Kyle Eastman today playing for Wasps and thought he might fit in very well to what Sale do. With George Ford, it will be good because it makes Sale relevant to more people than just us, just us three.
Yeah,
you know. Just you. Okay.
Yeah, you know, so it can't be a bad thing.
Where should we go next, Philip?
Well, the other transfer news is Finn Russell.
Oh, of course.
To somewhere in France.
Is possibly, that going to happen?
Possibly Montpellier. Well, I would suggest that there's a few French clubs who could offer him more than the SRU and Glasgow could offer him.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the right move...
Is that the solution? Could it be the solution for Leicester?
That's interesting.
Could it be the solution for Bath?
Well, that's more interesting.
That's the interesting one.
So there is a big difference from being from going from Scotland to England than Scotland to France in terms of the number of games you play and in terms of the access and availability the players have. Because a lot of the Premiership clubs release their foreign players for the entire kind of foreign window. So like Maitland, for example, will be going back to Scotland for the full training camp. So there's definitely an advantage of going to Leicester for him and for the SRU.
Bath probably, probably an even better fit.
Yeah, Bath would be a great fit, actually. He's not too dissimilar to George Ford in the way he plays, what he manages the game. I don't think it'd be a particularly good move other than his bank balance going to France.
No, I agree. Everything about France is a little bit inferior when it comes to like the club structure, whether it be training,
the
whether it be
the coaching, medical.
Not the catering.
No, the catering is far superior.
Yeah, and I'm not talking just about the whole French cuisine. Just surely the amount of fatty products and lovely.
Well, was it ketogenic or what's the
ketogenic?
Ketogenic. Well, it won't be a problem.
Yeah.
No, because you to be ketogenic, you can't have any carbs.
Oh, that is a problem.
Real problem.
Yeah. No, you could live on pâté, couldn't you?
You could. If you just had pate and cheese, I guess that would be.
I'd give it a go. I'll give it a go if you want fans giving it a go next week.
We'll get the heart bypass booked in for next summer.
Yeah,
I do think this is an enormous blow for Glasgow if it happens.
Yeah,
it's a big blow for Scotland. They will still get him back, but maybe not the same access. But it's a huge blow for Glasgow because he is playing so. I mean, you saw when Glasgow travelled to Paris when Racing was still very much in the competition. And he completely outplayed Dan Carter. He did it 2 weeks on the bounce, actually, because the return leg he did exactly the same. But I think it's a massive blow for them. So I, for the state of the game, I kind of want him to...
Terrible for the Pro 12 as well.
Yeah, for the state of the game and the even distribution of players. For the Premiership, it would be a massive coup. And if he goes to France, I think it's just a sorry state of affairs all round.
Yeah, the... Yeah, I think he looked quite nice at Bath. The other thing about him as well is he is a cracking player, but he's cracking in the system that Glasgow run with the coach that builds everything around him. I just wonder if there might be a certain element of like AJ McGintiness, which is if you're very good in a system with a very good coach surrounded by players that suit you, and then you come to England to a completely different system, you might find that the grass isn't necessarily always greener.
I think there's quite a lot of similarities between Bath and Glasgow.
Yeah,
in that sense. Maybe.
I do think they play a similar brand of rugby. Yeah.
You got Rocco and Anthony Watson in your backfield, just the same as he's got Tommy Seymour and Stuart Hogg in your backfield there in that back line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
JJ and Mark Bennett.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, there's definite parallels. Trying to fit him into maybe something like, I don't know, Saracen's machine or... Yeah, but Bath's not a bad fit.
And lastly is Lee Hoppenny has apparently been made an offer by Wales.
Yeah, he's been made the bet, which means if he turns it down, he will have to be one of Warren Gatland's two overseas
Isn't
players
that just so
in Gatland's
rubbish.
Law.
I mean, I don't know what the money is, but the
someone from the WRU, I can't remember who it said he's going to have a decision between his head and his heart, which pretty much said he's going to have to decide, does he want cash or does he want to play for Wales?
Hate it.
Yeah. They've described it as the best possible offer that they can make, which is obviously considerably less than what Toulon can make.
Yeah, I really dislike this because they, as their perceived market value, well, here's some news for you, WRU, the market value is whatever someone is prepared to pay.
The highest bidder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, them putting a tag on it like, oh, this is his market value, it's idiotic. And something's gone on in Wales this week, something to do with, like, club restructuring and the WRU. But quite frankly, I'm not interested. Just tell me when they're playing decent rugby. And
it's a bit, like going, right, we've got an estate agent, say, we've got two people that want to buy a house. One of them will pay you double.
But the other one will pay you market value.
But they're a yeah. One of them will pay you double the other one, but the one that will pay you doubles a really questionable character. Are you sure you want them living in the house that you used to live in?
It is like... Well, the one that's half, we think that's market value, so you should probably take that.
Yeah, head or heart, mate. Head or heart. No. Professional sport. Get over it. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm not particularly interested in Welsh issues at the moment, so we'll move on. Do you want to say anything about either the Gloucester battering of Worcester or Sale's marvellous narrow defeat?
Or Harlequin's narrow win.
A great Harlequin's team.
Let's briefly do this. Gloucester, let me rattle through this. David Humphreys said that these three games over the Christmas New Year period were season defining. They threw it away with the first two really disappointing defeats. And then, just like typical Gloucester, when it's kind of already gone a bit too far past that point where their season's already been defined, in David Humphreys' words, they then pull out this spellbinding performance against Worcester.
It is okay. It's not okay.
Bristol a really spirited, narrow defeat, picked up another losing bonus point to close the gap on Worcester to just a point.
Bristol staying up, I'm sure.
It puts Worcester in a really perilous position.
Yeah. And Sale got a losing bonus point.
Did they not get two? They not finish within seven and get four tries?
No.
Solomon only got two, McGuigan and...
That was it.
I think that was it.
Maybe they did get two. They're on 20 points. Anyway... it does feel... Well, that result certainly makes it feel like it's slipping away from Worcester, and Sale and Bristol are in the ascendancy. But Worcester's result last week against Quins...
Sale still haven't won. They played better.
But they did play better. But
against a poor Quins team.
A Quins team missing eight or so internationals and losing Marler before kickoff and Evans five minutes into the game.
Although Sweel showed some wheels.
Yeah.
It was interesting, actually, because I can't remember who it was I heard talking a little while ago who said that Sweel was the fastest man in the squad.
Really?
Yeah. You hear the same things about Cipriani, though.
Proper gas.
It was, what's his name? The former fly half, who's now their backs coach.
London Irish.
Mapletoft, yeah. It was him. He said Sweel is the fastest man in their squad. So he certainly showed it.
Solomon, you're right. Only three tries. God damn it. I thought that there was four. Solomona, four tries in three games.
And a disallowed try.
This guy, I think, is going to be really, really something. Not only that...
If there starts to be calls for him to play for England, I will my piss will boil.
Well, that's exactly I'm about to get.
I can't be doing with this. And I don't want to be... I'm not being all bloody... Little Englander, but it just the integrity of what it means to represent
to
your country
British.
Is ruined, and what it means to pull on that role
is ruined. He's got 1 year's residency, or I don't think he's got any claims to play for England. But on the current laws,
he will have because he's been at Bradford for a year.
Castleford.
Castleford for a year. Anyway.
Well, you know who is eligible to play for England?
Who had a tremendous game.
Again.
Scored a try, made a hell of a lot of yards with ball in hand, and was kicking sticks again.
Jason, Will Addison.
Jason Woodward.
No, Will Addison, I reckon, will play for Ireland one day.
I don't think he'll play international rugby.
Well, you know, okay, fine. Jason Woodward, why not? He can play for England tomorrow. He's not capped. I think his mum's English.
Grandmother, I think.
It's on. So he is English qualified and ready to play, and bloody good too.
He could be that gap to bridge the fullback conundrum from Mike Brown to the youth of tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm really excited by him.
I'm more in Tim's camp on this one, but I wouldn't completely close my mind off to the idea.
Of Woodward or Solomona?
Woodward, that is.
If
he's qualified by birth, family, game on. That's no different from anyone.
Yeah.
So I know in the
What?
In the year we've had Brexit and everything, people are getting touchy about this.
Tell me this. When did you turn
into
from,
you?
Yeah. When did you go from a left-wing populist into a right-wing populist?
I just love my game.
Yeah.
Make rugby great again.
Yeah, ragger.
Right, fixtures.
Yeah, back to Europe.
Yeah.
So, again, because the clubs and TV and viewers and attending fans can't be bothered with the Challenge Cup particularly.
Neither can we.
Neither can we be. So we apologise. The message, if your club is in the Challenge Cup, is just do better.
Yeah.
And then you'll get more coverage. We could mention the fixtures, but...
Don't bother.
But also in the Champions Cup, we can kind of just skim past the ones that aren't... There's not a lot riding on it.
Nothing. Only mention the Challenge Cup fixtures, which are from Tier 2 nations, because they deserve it.
Yeah, you're right.
Everyone else doesn't.
Yeah, how are NSI getting on in there?
Yeah, I want to know about NSI, and that's it.
I'll find out. I'll get onto that. You take us through your Challenge Cup.
So Challenge Cup fixtures... Let me just get these up.
I say that. This year, this week, I care intensely about the Challenge Cup. I care so much about the Challenge Cup. Challenge Cup, yeah. I can't wait. I've been looking forward to going to work at Bath Bristol for
Are you doing Bath Bristol
months,
as well?
Weeks. Yeah.
So you're doing Bath Bristol, you're doing Paris, and then you're doing Toulon?
Yeah.
Oh.
What a life.
What a life.
Jet set.
I'm just going to be seeing a stadium...
Oh, I'm just going to be seeing stadiums and high-level sport. With my TV mates.
High-level, hanging out with Ugo and Flats and Nick Mullins.
I'd rather be in your dingy basement, JB. Right, okay.
Right, fixtures. Friday night, Leinster host Montpellier. Now, this is Pool 4,
mm-hmm.
in which both teams can still qualify.
Yep.
Leinster top the group with Montpellier just behind them.
And are they going to Montpellier?
It's in Leicester. It's in Dublin.
Leinster.
Yeah.
Leinster, but Montpellier will make it very difficult.
Do you think?
The way they play rugby, they play a suffocating, controlling They've got an enormous forward pack and an enormous back line.
I mean, I assume Leinster aren't going to rest their whole squad. and if they don't, they play such scintillating stuff. I mean, if they go two or three tries ahead, or maybe it's like 10 points in like the first quarter, if Montpellier try and open up, it could get messy.
Montpellier never try and open up.
Montpellier
will keep this a low-scoring game, but Leinster to win.
Leinster will win, and I think they'll win comfortably, which will put them on 21 points and in pole position for one of the home quarter and semi.
So what if Montpellier win?
Well, then they'll probably be level or just behind Leinster.
Okay.
Yes, they'd just be behind.
And that would mean definitely only one of them will go through, which is probably going to happen anyway. But okay.
Then we have got on Saturday, from Pool 1, we've got two games. We've got Glasgow-Munster,
mm-hmm.
which is a massive game.
Massive.
So again, these two are at the top of the pool.
Yeah.
Munster are top now. The table I'm looking at hasn't updated.
Munster on 16 points.
Yeah,
top.
Glasgow with 13.
Glasgow with 13, second. Now
both with three from four.
If Munster can lose and still qualify, Glasgow probably have to win, or at least get a couple of points.
Yeah,
to out of the game.
Yes,
just to have a chance of qualifying.
But Glasgow at home. It's a very, very difficult
They've
place
They've both
to
won
go.
Three, lost one.
Yeah.
So Munster the three bonus points Munster have picked up have been massive.
I think Glasgow will win this.
I think Glasgow as well.
Yeah. Because everyone has sort of been supporting Munster. Everyone's kind of got behind them. And Glasgow were the first people to really get a hiding at the start of this whole process.
Good point, actually. They got revenge.
Yeah, I think there's a revenge mission here.
Then the other game in that pool is...
Which I'm working at.
What?
Dead rubber.
Oh, yeah. Racing Leicester.
Yeah.
Not a bad city to go and watch a dead rubber match.
Yeah.
But we don't need to talk about that.
No, we don't.
I mean, theoretically, Leicester could still qualify if they got two bonus point wins.
Because
they could get to 18, which would often see you through.
But it's not this year, mate. I don't think.
No, probably not. Probably not.
Theoretically, you're right.
Yeah.
Actually, going back, looking at where the runners-up are at, probably Glasgow could even lose
and still
with a bonus point or two bonus points and qualify, as we've said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, Pool 2, we've got Connacht versus Zebre, which Connacht... So, Pool 2 is very interesting because you've got Wasps, Connacht and Toulouse all on 13 points. So, Connacht at home to Zebre, bonus point win to take them to 18. Then, Wasps host Toulouse at the Rico.
This is massive.
Wasps who have 19 consecutive home wins.
I think Wasps will batter them, actually. I'm not entirely sure that there's... I'm not entirely sure this is going to be as close as people make out.
The Wasps weakness... So they've got defensive question marks in their backs, and there are question marks over the pack. I mean, when Leicester turned the screw, they got a few scrum penalties. Gendron Cole did.
Do you think...
So this enormous to lose
Do you
pack.
Think that is more a symptom of how fast and how much Wasps exert themselves early doors rather than being a weak pack? I mean, if they played a different way... I don't think the pack is nearly as vulnerable as maybe people think.
I think they've spent nowhere near as much on their pack as they have on their back line.
Mm.
And they've got a good, solid, well-drilled under Dai Young. It's always going to be a well-drilled pack, but they don't
I mean,
have...
Which position group do you look at in Wasps and say that's weak or could be improved?
Props.
And what, Mellon and Marty Moore? I think that's pretty decent.
It's decent. No, it's decent, yeah. But it could be improved.
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
I think they're probably the best. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, I actually think that this heavy lumbering Toulouse pack is going to be stretched. It's going to be run off the field. There's no way. Okay, hear me now. Don't believe me later. I think this will be a fairly large Wasps win.
I'm going for a Wasps win.
Fairly large Wasps win?
They're incentivised to get a bonus point
because of the
way the group is. So, yes, bonus point for Wasps.
I think this is the first real... Bearing in mind we're looking ahead towards the end of seasons and knockout stages of competitions and playoffs, and Wasps have got big game players. But this will be... Mentally, this is a really interesting test because there's a lot riding on this. And this will be a really good measure of where Wasps are at.
Yeah, and
we know they can play amazing rugby, but actually winning those.
Do you know what the big difference is between this year, last year, and the year before? This year, the weight of expectation is on Wasps to actually win something. Mm. Previous years, they were kind of plucky underdogs that played nice rugby. Well, they can't claim that now because they've spent a bloody fortune.
Yeah. Wasps win.
Wasps do have the advantage of next weekend they travel to Zebre.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd expect them to get 5 points in the bag guaranteed from that fixture.
Yeah, so Wasps are probably qualifying regardless.
Yes, sure, but I still think Wasps will want... Yeah. They'll want to top it. They want to top the overall. They want to qualify as number one.
Connacht will be desperate for Wasps to win.
Yes.
Because Connacht then could lose and still go through potentially. So
yes.
Anyway, against Toulouse in the final week. Go on then, Phil.
The final game on Saturday, although it's not final time-wise, is Pool 4, Northampton Cast, which is a bit of a dead rubber again. Leinster and Montpellier are the two great hopes in that team, in that pool. So,
yeah. Cast can potentially. They'll probably have a crack.
Cast theoretically could.
Yeah.
But...
Unlikely.
Yeah.
So on to Sunday.
Sunday, Pool 3. Which is the Saracens at Toulon Scarlet Sail Pool. Scarlets host the only unbeaten team, Saracens.
Yeah.
Yeah, could get messy.
Now, quick question from the Saracens game. Don't want to go into the incident. Do you think Barrett might get cited?
Has
he actually been cited?
I believe
now?
So.
It's until Sunday night they've got.
Oh,
so
is that right?
Now,
oh, okay.
I've not seen the news, but we've been podcasting for the last however long.
I thought you were going to say something else, which is have Saracens lost their edge?
No.
Because there is potential for Barrett to get cited and miss this game alongside Baz Barrington, and if Saracens lose Barrington, they've already lost McIlvenna Polo. So
down to Sitili or was it
Titi Lamassetti?
What did I just call him? Odnos.
Letiti.
Yeah, him. Yeah, they're down to him. Yeah, because they're missing both the Vinopola boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually.
We could probably have another chunk of time, but we've got the Six Nations getting closer, but like more England players out. England, Eddie Jones is going to be having a couple of head scratches, isn't he?
Yeah, with Haskell concussing himself. Rob Shaw
concussing. Concussing himself. Rob Shaw out.
Needing surgery. It's a good job Tom Wood is playing quite well.
Good job Mark Wilson's playing well.
Clifford's out as well, who would have been one of the options.
Don't yeah. Anyway, so Toulon host Richard Cockerell's first involvement will be helping to prepare Toulon to play Sale at home. They'll roll them over.
Yeah, Sale. Nothing. Sale concentrating on the league now.
Nothing. There's how many teams are there with 0 points? Racing 92, 0 points. Zebra 0 points. Sale 0 points. And that's it.
And Sale.
Mike Phillips, effect.
Sale have scored the fewest points in the competition, with 29. From four games.
That's ugly. But Scarlet Saracens, I expect Saracens to go there and win, but Scarlet showed against Toulon that they're plucky. And in the Pro 12, they've been playing well. Their man Ospreys are in the top four.
Yeah, they got a good win against Ulster, despite that heinous yellow card for Reedy.
No, it's all right. Come on.
And then Pool 5, which is also quite an interesting one. Well, actually, I was going to say it's quite an interesting one. No, it's not really. Clermont, 17 points, who will qualify. They travel to Bordeaux. Bordeaux do have a chance. If they get two wins from the next two games, they could qualify as a runner-up. But Bordeaux-Clermont, which I'm saying Clermont, and Exeter-Ulster. Again, Ulster theoretically do have the chance to qualify, but I can't see it.
Saracens and the one thing to think about is Saracens and Clermont bonus point wins will mean, am I right in saying this? Bonus point wins mean they could potentially tie up home quarter final.
So it's a home quarter final,
not necessarily a home semi.
You can't
home country semi.
Yeah, you can't guarantee a home country semi, no matter where you finish, because it's the. As we struggled with this,
yeah,
but it's the biggest upset from the quarterfinals gets the home semi final.
Yeah, God, let's only get into that when we get there again.
Definitely not talk about that.
Yeah.
and that's
the rugby.
Looking forward to it.
Just thank you very much. We've been getting loads of comments and stuff and tweets. Ben Davey, for example, tweeted at Rugby Podcast, Manu to the Pro 12, loads of recovery time, not much competition. That's an interesting shout as well.
Yeah.
That's an interesting shout.
No, because if you went to Ireland, the IRFU will only protect their own players.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll just be put in the firing line at all times.
Yeah, against Zebra and Dragons. Oh, no, because they'll play their.
They'll play
the Stars against Zebra and Dragons.
Yeah, and they'll rest their players in the meat grinder at Munster and Glasgow away and.
Yeah, do you think they've got like a little
Ospreys
pact, which
away.
Is like, look, you play your first team, we'll play our second team. When you come back and visit, we'll do the opposite.
We just guarantee the same clubs in the top four every year.
Perfect.
Robert Sharp, Ian R. Sharp on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. JB, are those Wasps socks?
Yes.
And someone else said your sock game is literally spot on.
Very good. We should also mention
Cornerstone
Fantasy Rugby Draft as well. The Super Rugby opens next year. If you've got a team, put egg in the title. We will be drawing some stash soon. And also on the Fantasy Rugby Draft, they now have a game lock, or they will have a game lock for the next game week.
What does that even mean?
Rather than a game week lock. So until now, you half an hour before the first kickoff of the weekend, the Bath Newcastle game this weekend, you have to lock your entire team. Now the players are only locked until just before their team plays. So, for example, if you had two fly halves who were both playing in the Sunday game, say you had Owen Williams and Gopeth, both playing in the Sunday game, you could switch them out 5 minutes before the Sunday kickoff if Owen Williams gets an injury. And it's been brought in more because there's late changes in the Super Rugby.
Not because Tim's been on to Bruce saying that he wants some rule changes to suit his team.
No.
Some other comments and stuff. Just Ben Davey says, "Not knowing what Ellis Genge did is killing me." 6 exclamation marks. Well, JB...
Tim will just probably tell it on Facebook Live. No secrets on Facebook Live. Right.
That's a great... kind of teaser. Just watch the full hour and a half Facebook Live video. You might get something.
The last thing as well. The week after next, Saracens are playing Toulon at Saracens, right?
Yeah.
Now, there is the London Scholars game going on in Royal Artillery. Are we going to play in the game?
James Parsons is on the Facebook live stream has said, are you still attending the Scholars v Wigan Capital Challenge on the 20th? I heard a rumour JB and Tim might be lacing up the boots to trial some rugby league in a support game.
We've got 3 tickets to the dinner.
When is it?
It's on the 20th. It's on a Friday. So I doubt you can come because you're incredibly busy.
Yeah, I won't be able to make that with work.
But you might be down there.
I'm working on the Saturday in Leicester.
So I could get down there for the day, I guess.
Anyway, this is not pod worthy. Just getting our diaries out and having a chat.
Sorry, it is because if you attend the game, it's at Royal Artillery, which is meant to be pretty cool anyway, because that's in the city. And it's also attended by Mike Ford, which also means it'll be attended by Cockers and the Toulon players apparently. So if you want to get a sneaky peek of the Toulon players a day before they play, they should be at Royal Artillery.
As long as I get in the queue for the food before Bastard, yeah. Fine.
I think you and I, if we play as well, we will play prior to the Scholars Wigan game.
Play rugby league.
Rugby league is easy.
Run straight.
Yeah.
Just run straight.
You know, I've got rumour to count to 5.
I'm actually going to borrow Phil's dad's whippet.
Got some pie and pee wet.
Yeah, perfect.
Pee's wet. Bobby Zed.
Right. Right, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for watching. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, if you want to watch the whole video and see JB's strong sock game once again.
Yeah.
Phil's top line stash game. And in the meantime, just tell your mates, leave a review on iTunes, get your Cornerstone Razor using the Egg 10 at checkout, get your fantasy rugby draft team sorted out for the Super Rugby season. And thank you very much for listening. Top work, JB.
Thank you, Tim.
Well done, Philip.
Thank you, Tim.
In a bit.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.